Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 163.
This week on the podcast, there's heartbreak in the Warhawk community as Iran's nuclear deal robs them of a reason to rumble.
And as if just living in Tennessee isn't its own brand of terror, their standard American-issue mass shootings are now getting complicated by non-redneck political ideologies.
Donald Trump picks a fight with Maverick John McCain, but luckily for everyone, he also picked a fight with Mexican drug lord El Chapo, so somebody may rid us of the Trump problem soon anyway.
The Democrats' first cattle call gives Iowa party activists a look at all five candidates, leaving many of them to wonder, hey, what are most of you doing here?
Phoenix feels the burn with the biggest campaign rally of the season, and for anybody wondering, that does mean Sheriff Arpaio's Arizona just had the biggest rally of the season, and it was for a socialist.
And Oklahomans are residents of a state that didn't even exist at the time of the Civil War, and they are also people that just waved the Confederate flag at Obama. That kind of sums up what's going on in Oklahoma.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
This hasn't been a particularly news-filled week, aside from the Iran nuclear deal, but
right.
It's been a sort of funny.
And we're going to lead with that, which is
we're going to lead with that right after we discuss right. RonPaulMessage49.com.
Oh my god. I was watching the tennis channel,
as you
of
do,
course,
as Brent as, does. You don't, as, I do. As humans, but Brent certainly
right,
is watching
I do,
that channel.
All the time. I was watching a Davis Cup match, of which I knew the results already, by the way.
Sounds super boring, but continue.
Sure. And on the TV,
lo
came,
and behold,
came a 60-second ad, too, by the way. Like,
that's expensive ad time, even on the tennis channel, for Ron Paul Message 49.
Didn't need to be that long,
nope,
by the way.
Certainly didn't.
As a person who does this for a living, that was my... Well, it wasn't my first thought. It was
your second
like my
or third thought, but it
maybe,
was definitely
maybe
a thought.
Tenth thought, right. Because by the time this ad was over with, I'd had a lot of thoughts.
Right.
But it was a 60-second spot for this thing that Ron Paul has a warning for America.
Yep.
And it's a dire warning.
And you know
because there's dire music playing in the background.
And he uses really like dramatic language too.
Right.
He basically says he's giving us a dire warning.
That's right. There is something that's about to happen that only Ron Paul knows. By the way.
For reasons that only Ron Paul can know, because only Ron Paul could possibly have predicted that a thing that only Ron Paul would think would happen would
right.
happen.
That's right. And you can only find out about it on his website.
Right. RonPaulMessage49.com.
Message 49.
Which we're now advertising as effectively as he did, by the way.
Correct. Yeah. We've been more succinct about it.
Yeah. Also, you may wonder why Ron Paul, a person who's not running for anything in particular, is buying ad time to sell a website where he just gives dire warnings about how the economy
is we're
going to
have
apart.
A huge crash. That's right. What the warning is. It's going to be worse than the one leading up to the financial meltdown of 2008. He knows this.
I'm not a rocket scientist either, but I do know that at some point in the future, we will have another crash.
That's right.
I can confirm that as well.
He's on to something. He's not a...
He doesn't give us a
clairvoyant.
Time frame. No. This is pretty much something you can say at any point in history.
That's right.
At some vague point in the future, there will be a crash.
It's going to happen.
So get ready for that, guys.
That's right.
Because we even know it's going to happen.
That's right.
I don't know that RonPaulMessage49.com, first of all, get a different web domain name. Hello.
What, message 49?
Like, don't put a number ever in your
What are
domain
the previous
name.
48? But, were they all just as
Do you
dire?
Think that he owns Ron Paul Message 48 also?
I don't know.
Do you think every year on the tennis channel, he just goes on some sort of, like, advertising binge?
Maybe.
Where he advertises a new thing that he thought of?
Perhaps.
I mean, I feel like for the last 49 years, perhaps Ron Paul has been advertising to tennis channel watchers.
Yeah.
That... something dire is about to happen. And a couple of those years, he was probably correct.
Probably.
2007 was a good time for Ron Paul, you know, message 40.
40
or 42 or whatever
right.
it would have been.
Yeah.
We're not mathematicians over
no.
here. But in any case, highly recommend looking for this ad somewhere.
Find
it was
watch
hilarious.
It. I know. I recorded it on my phone from my TV
yeah,
and sent
he texted
it to Lila.
It to me.
And I was like, what is happening on my television right now?
It was like a great use for technology. Like, this was
it
what
was.
Cell phones are made for.
Right.
This is what a smartphone is for.
Yeah, exactly.
It's to help people watch your tennis channel, RonPaul49.com commercials.
Totally.
RonPaulMessage49.com.
That's right.
In any case, that happened out there in the world this
that's
week.
Right.
And that's really the most important thing I think you could take away from this podcast. But since you're here, let's
right.
talk about the Iran deal.
We'll tell you about... we've got some world news for you.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know how we hate world news, but there's a lot of it going on. There's no local... like, there's no... domestic news. So,
no. So we got our Iran nuclear deal this
yeah,
week.
It's happening.
It's done.
We,
I mean, it's not done because Congress is going to try and muck it up like they do.
Shenanigan it.
But
I'm gonna make shenanigan, by the way, into a verb.
A verb. I like it. Yeah,
it's the new thing I'm working on. Yeah. Anyway,
so I think before we even talk too much about it, and I think that this is a thing that people are forgetting, is because I think a lot of people who don't think that we should be doing this are people who don't think that we should be unilaterally talking to Iran,
right.
which is
lucky
what
for
we're
them.
Doing
because we're not doing
that's
that.
Not the thing. I think a lot of people are like, I don't know how America entered into this deal with the Iranians. They're crazy. Well, it was us and like all of the other most powerful countries of the world.
Right.
Like it was,
we didn't
was the,
personally enter into this deal.
No, we didn't. It's us, Russia, China, France, the UK, and Germany. And if you think getting
it's
all
like
of
us,
those
Russia
people...
Russia and China together in a room right now.
Right? Like,
that's
getting
deal.
All of those people and Iran on the same page is
some
not something
magic.
That I would have
yeah.
thought John Kerry was capable
nope.
of, by the way.
No,
all.
I'm feeling pretty proud of John Kerry for pulling
right?
this off.
Yeah, I know.
I feel like finally yeah. putting that height to good use.
So, anyway, just keep that in mind as we tell you about this deal.
Right. So here are the main points of the deal,
yeah.
which we've sort of hinted at before. We sort of knew what to expect out of this deal.
Right.
It's going to curb most of their nuclear program. It's going to turn its Fordow facility
sure.
into a research center. That was, I guess, a nuclear facility
right.
of some
that
sort where they were
the
doing research.
That has been...
That has been in question mm-hmm. during this whole process. And people thought that they were enriching uranium in centrifuges there. So that's
right.
so they're going to turn it back into a research facility. It's also going to rebuild one of its water reactors, which is another site that people were worried they were using for
right.
nuclear enrichment.
They basically had they came to an agreement of what the design was going to be.
Right.
So they're literally rebuilding this thing like in a way that
to meet a design, so it's not a weapons manufacturing.
Right, exactly.
Situation.
I think they were like initially planning to build it underground and like do a bunch of stuff like that. So they're not
right.
doing that anymore.
No.
So,
also, that point in the deal that we talked about before, where they have to give up all their fancy centrifuges and take old centrifuges,
that's in it.
Is happening.
That's right.
As a person who knows that at one time people were making nuclear weapons with old centrifuges, because we had to have old ones before we had new ones,
right.
I don't feel like that's necessarily a thing I was obsessed with, but okay, I'm not I'm not an expert.
But they, Iran agreed to, they currently have 20,000 centrifuges, which are being used to enrich uranium, and they're going down to 6,104 over the next 10
Very
years.
Very specific number
yeah,
that
exactly
they're going to decrease.
So, and they also have to minimize their... uranium stockpile by 98%.
Right.
So obviously
they're giving up a lot of their uranium.
Right, exactly. So they are still the uranium that they get to keep, they are still able to enrich it, but I mean I don't know the science about this, but they're only able to enrich it at a certain percentage that is what you can use
for like energy.
For energy.
Right, because countries are using nuclear energy. That's one
right.
of the ways that people provide power to nations. So
right.
that was why we couldn't just get rid of all of their nuclear capabilities entirely, because they have the right to enrich uranium to provide power.
Right, exactly. There's also a what they're calling a snapback provision, which allows them to basically re-sanction them using all of the sanctions that they had before if they don't comply. Like if
yeah.
the inspectors, you know, find out that they don't comply. And that's the other thing that this provides, this deal, is that there's a comprehensive inspections regime that is going to be going on. So we're supposedly, you know, so many people are mad about like, well, how can we trust the Iranians? And it's not about whether we can trust them or not. It's whether we can know
right,
that they are untrustworthy.
Right.
right. And this supposedly does that. Now there are people who think that the inspections sort of don't go far enough. And that's one of the things that people are upset about.
Right.
But
previously, however, we weren't inspecting anything.
Right.
So this
exactly.
is more inspections than we had before.
Bingo.
So that's good news.
Yeah, exactly.
People are complaining because there are four American detainees in Iran and we didn't get them out. I feel like when you're making a deal about nuclear arms, you don't necessarily also need to attach other diplomatic situations to that deal.
That's maybe not smart.
That's
what Obama and Kerry have said, that they are working tirelessly to get those people
right,
out of
sure.
the country. But,
you don't attach that to a nuclear deal and
now,
blow up the deal over the four detainees.
I heard... Bill Richardson was on Meet the Press this morning, who has, you know, dealt with a lot of, you know, sort of, you know, foreign policy things like this. And he said that the Iranians should have offered them up as just,
right,
we are entering into this agreement with good
right.
faith. And that I can sort of understand. And that is why
I also don't feel like the Iranians are necessarily the people that we expect to do things in good faith.
Exactly.
Like, maybe that's not what we right. think that they're... That's like when you're let down because you don't get a thank you note for something that you wouldn't
have
expected a thank you note
for. And I think so many people are, you know, misunderstanding what this bill is. This bill is or not, it's not a bill.
Agreement.
This agreement is to make sure that they don't get a bomb. It's not to, like, now be besties with them.
Right. One's trying to be besties with Iran.
That's not
the idea. We're trying to make sure that they can't.
They don't blow up Earth.
Right, exactly. That's pretty.
There's a difference.
There's a big difference there. A wide, right? Yeah. Wide schism between those two things. It doesn't have, you know, it doesn't do anything. It doesn't deal with anything in regards to a lot of the groups that they support in the Middle East.
Right.
You know, they're funding a lot of kind of nefarious groups in the Middle East.
Hamas.
Hezbollah, Hamas. And they, you know, they themselves don't have the greatest human rights record.
Right.
And it doesn't really talk about anything except their nuclear capacity. It does not get into any other diplomatic concerns at all.
And it lifted the conventional arms embargo that was previously on them.
Which is kind of shitty because they are arming a lot of random groups
and now tearing the rest of the region
apart.
Now they can have ballistic missiles and things like that. So people are not happy about that. And, you know.
Sure. That's, I get it.
Yeah.
But it's also, the Republicans are sort of claiming they're going to try to torpedo this in Congress.
Yeah.
Obama was like, you can try to change it, but I'm not going to pass it you change it.
The rules of the deal are that he has to be, there has to be a two-thirds majority in both houses to override his veto on this particular bill. They just passed this bill that they would have oversight on this. They just passed that like in May or April or something like that. Because
in preparation for this moment.
Right, exactly. So really all Obama needs is like a third of either of those houses of Congress.
Yeah.
They don't have the votes. They're
going to
be out of luck.
Now
there are a decent amount of Democrats who are sort of claiming that they are that they're suspect of this. So,
but we don't have a better alternative.
Well, that's the other thing. I mean, they were. Exactly. And they, you know. So many people are saying that this will probably keep Iran from having a weapon for the next 10 years. Even Tom Cotton, who was on Meet the Press this morning, said as much. But that is, what's the other option?
I mean, bombing them isn't going to keep Cotton seriously against this deal.
Right, exactly.
As he says that.
Yeah, exactly. And what are you going to, are you going to bomb all, are you,
that works
are you
so well for us, by the way.
Right,
that's
exactly.
always bringing stability and peace to regions.
Well, and at the beginning of the Bush administration, Iran hardly had any of these centrifuges. So whatever we were doing, you know, for 8 years during that point was not working either. So that is why you would have to think that their only solution would be that they want to bomb them.
Yeah, I mean that...
We know that to be the
case. Creating more tension in the Middle East only really empowers a country like Iran, which is funding a lot of these smaller, you know, groups in the Middle East. And I don't see how, like... I feel like, A, having a diplomatic agreement with them is always better than taking something by force anyway. But especially in a situation like this where we've basically like broken the entire Middle East open for like weird faction warfare to occur.
Right.
Like I don't think we gain anything from not, you know, from trying to muscle our way through this situation instead of just making an agreement so that they feel like, okay, well, we won't at least be bombed if, you know, if we get rid of these centrifuges, we can continue our nefarious plans in other ways. Like, you know.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, in Greece.
Oh boy, we talked a lot about this last
week.
It's
on fire, literally, because the country is literally setting fire to itself in what I predicted would be very exciting riots, and they are having them.
They're having
Greek people don't sit by idly and complain about things, guys.
No,
they just riot.
Well, they
and
elected,
this is riot worthy.
They elected a leader to not enter into these sort of, you know, negotiations
sort of
to go into more austerity measures. And that is exactly what happened. He signed on to this new agreement.
Austerity measure
program. So on Monday,
there's a new bailout, this deal that Greece was trying to get them to take.
Yep.
He has brought it back to the Greek parliament.
His own party is rebelling. 38 of the 149 members of his own party wouldn't even vote on it. And he had to
shuffle his cabinet because two of his cabinet ministers were like, fuck you.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, and this is basically going to raise their taxes. It's going to slash their spending. It's going to slash a bunch of other government programs.
Pensions.
Pensions. Yeah, exactly. And this is. The reason it sells off
all these state-owned assets, and who's going to buy them? German companies, probably, who are going to make money off of them.
This is the reason that they are in this state right now is because they had to do this in the
bailout after 2008.
And it's because they keep going into these austerity. They have a 25% unemployment rate right now, and they don't have any programs
and
to lift these
youth
people
unemployment
out of,
rate is like 50%
and
or something.
And
crazy.
There's nothing to lift these people out of poverty. No. The people who are retired, who's supposed to have these pensions, don't have any money, and they're now going to have less money. They're going to have higher taxes. How can this possibly help? They're never going to be able to pay this debt back.
No, it's not sustainable as a program, and also it's going to get harder and harder the more that they privatize services, because the services are going to get more expensive. They're not going to be receiving the money on the other end of the services. So when like Greek, you know, when the Greek government pays for bus service, say, and yeah. then, you know, they are the ones operating the bus service, then the fares on the bus service go to them, and the Greek people decide how the bus service ultimately continues to operate. If a German company runs the buses, then all of the profits from the bus services go to the German company. They never get reinvested back into the Greek economy.
Right.
So all the money ends up leaving.
Right.
So they just end up with less money under a situation where they've privatized everything.
Yeah.
And I mean, if I were a Greek person, I would probably be rioting too at this point.
Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly, they elected this guy to be like, fuck you to Germany.
Right.
And I mean, he got bullied.
He got bullied.
Not even, like, in a completely inappropriate manner.
Well, and supposedly, like, that, I mean, we know that's what happened, but I mean, I don't know that people are using the term bully, but even when you read news, you know, when you read articles about this, they say that he basically came to the realization that it was either this or to leave, you know,
leave the EU.
Yeah. Because that was really sort of what it came down to. So he truly was bullied.
Yeah,
it
was, he was basically blackmailed.
He wasn't metaphorically bullied.
He was actually bullied.
Yeah.
And I think to some degree, this is going to make their continued cooperation in the EU impossible anyway. I don't know what happens. You know, the EU is relatively new. We don't know what happens when something like this happens in the EU because it never has before.
Right.
Stuff like this has happened in the US and we've like figured it out. But we also have, as we said last week, we have a very different system here where we really do consider ourselves one nation where we invest in the worst state economies federally.
Right.
So
yeah.
We make sure that this kind of thing doesn't happen in America. But this is sort of uncharted territory for the EU. They've been trying to expand into some of these states that have, you know, riskier economies.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've been sort of like half expanding into even almost parts of the Middle East. I mean, they've, you know, with their talks with Turkey and things like that, they've really been trying to expand their borders to kind of create a big economic zone. And if they are not going to be able to help their states that need help like this, and German people are going to think that Greeks are just being greedy or whatever they have been saying in Germany this whole time, it's not going
to
work.
No. And this is not the way to help them.
This is not a way to help them. And it's not a way to help yourselves, ultimately.
They need lifted out of this, not oppressed into more of it.
No.
It just doesn't make any sense.
This is going to make it impossible for Germany to have the credibility to continue kind of doing what they do anyway. I am furious about this. I'm interested to see what happens, because I feel like of all of the nations they could have done this to, the sort of Greek culture of rebellion is like a pretty active culture. Like Greek people really aren't just going to sit around and take.
Greece has with Germany too.
Well, exactly.
They may not
have the financial ability to do something about this, but they are going to have the social ability to like talk about it. And it's I'm interested to see what Greek people wind up saying about this and what happens to Greece, because this is going to be a mess.
Yeah. It is.
We had more shootings here, so
business
as usual here.
That's right.
Got country where guns are just being sold on a Craigslist-like website for guns, by the way. This Tennessee shooting that happened on Thursday, the guy got the guns from armlist.com, which is the Craigslist of guns.
Yeah, and he had a bunch of guns, too.
Tons
Didn't
of
he have, like,
he
three
had,
or four
like,
guns
yeah,
or something,
guns,
like,
I think.
With him?
And
yeah.
he had an AK-74, an AR-15, some gun I've never heard of, and a handgun.
Yeah.
I know at least two of those are guns you don't need for casual sport.
Right.
I've never heard of the other two,
no.
but whatever.
You need them to hunt
you need
humans.
You need them to hunt humans.
Yeah.
Deer. You could hunt deer with a bow and arrow.
Shotgun.
And deer are the only animals we actively need you to hunt. And
That's
maybe
right.
bunny rabbits in parts of the world, because
sure.
bunnies sometimes
of
get out of hand.
Times.
But you don't need an AR-15 to hunt.
No.
Hunt
no.
for sport. In
no,
any
that's,
case.
That's mass human shooting.
That's mass
material.
Human shooting. The suspect was a 24-year-old named Mohammed Yusuf Abdulaziz. He was born in Kuwait, but he was a U.S. citizen. And he opened fire on a military recruiting center in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and then drove to a naval reserve about 6 miles away and killed four Marines. And then he was shot as well.
Yeah.
So just another one of our glorious traditional American shootings
they've
here.
They've been sort of, they're still looking into this. The FBI, of course, is looking into this because of, you know, he... He was born in Kuwait. He has recently spent, we've learned that he recently spent some time in the Middle East. He was in Jordan. We also found out very recently that he sent a text message that had like a Bible verse from the Quran, which is, was very sort of like.
A Bible verse from the Quran.
That's right.
Can tell
a
where.
Verse. Yes.
What kind of verses Brent normally discusses.
Totally. Yes. Well, we live in a Christian nation.
That's right. That's one thing we know. There was like a Quran verse that is sort of like a kill your enemies verse. Basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Like love for Islam and hatred for enemies verse.
Yeah.
Which he texted to his friend and his friend was like, I didn't think anything of it at the time. And I was like, did you think nothing
really?
Of it? That would be mighty concerning to me.
Right.
If I got like a weird verse from any kind of religion whatsoever that involved retribution for, you know,
so
enemies of...
People are sort of still kind of hesitant to say that it was a lone wolf terror attack, but it seems like we might get there.
It's
soon,
basically, he was sort of like the sort of like immigrant version of the white male lone wolf attacker. He was a 24-year-old male. He was, I think, had, you know, they talk a little bit about how he had been having some difficulties at home. His parents almost divorced in 2009. There were the local youth in Chattanooga were not super kind to him about his beliefs because he was living in a town with a lot of rednecks and they were hating Muslims.
We're probably calling them.
So they were
Bible
calling him
Quran
names, and he was getting into he was getting into arguments with kids in town. He had smoked pot and drank. You know, had been drinking alcohol and was kind
of
struggling.
Dealt with a lot of depression,
Yeah. He had gone to treatment at some point for drugs and alcohol and had a DUI last April or April of this year. So he'd been sort of struggling with doing that and being religious himself and like trying to figure out how that fit in. And then his friend said he was always interested in guns. But as we know, in Tennessee, that's probably not unusual.
No.
So
I wouldn't think.
Saying that some guy was always interested in guns does not point to mass murderer in Tennessee specifically.
No, it doesn't. Mm-hmm.
So in LA, it might. If we were like, oh, he was always into guns, I might be like, well, we should have known
he was
a mass murderer.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But in Tennessee, you know, and he also apparently enjoyed joyriding in the hills of Chattanooga.
Sounds lovely.
That sounds kind of fun. I would probably also enjoy joyriding in the hills of Chattanooga.
Yeah.
Maybe not with this guy while he was driving under the influence, but...
No, that's not what you're looking for.
But in any case, it's, you know, he's the things that are similar about the sort of young, lone wolf, white male terrorists is... That he was, his friends said he was totally normal, but he was having difficulties that kind of were making him a little withdrawn. And so no one saw this coming because he seemed like a nice, normal guy who wanted a future, but it seems like he probably snapped.
Well, and what has been so frustrating about this, and it's sort of like beating a dead horse at this point because since we started doing this podcast, we've done so many of these, we've written a blog about it,
right.
Done everything else. But I mean, so much, again,
he could have just not had these guns.
Thank you. Like listening to people sort of prognosticate about how we know how to deal with lone wolves and whether we keep track of
them guns.
Online and how we blah and like how could we have known and do we keep a record of everybody with depression and blah blah blah.
I think that the situation proves
you can't know.
You
don't get a bunch of guns from armslist.com or whatever the hell it was.
Which is a very unregulated website, by the way. They request that you follow state laws, but they don't check to make sure you've done background checks.
Yeah.
But
I just solved it.
Yeah. No, you can't know if some random depressed male of any ethnicity is going to snap.
Yes.
You can't know.
That's right. Doesn't matter whether they've been to Jordan or whether they're from Kuwait or whether they're
just some from the hills
loser
of Chattanooga.
From South Carolina.
Yeah, whether they're some loser who's been looking at too many Confederate flags. I mean, whatever the situation is, you can't know.
Once they're gunless.
It's like how people always say, I'm just going to bring this back to Serial because why not? It's like how people always say about the guy in Serial who was the pathological liar.
Oh, yeah.
Like that... No, he only told small lies. He would never tell a big lie. And I was like, you can't know if a pathological liar will tell a big lie or not. They lie for like that's what they do.
Right.
Like, what makes you think he wouldn't tell a big lie? He would because he would tell a small lie. Like, you can't know when you can't pretend like, oh, well, it's when they snap that we have to worry.
Right.
Like, you can't, like a slightly depressed person probably shouldn't have a gun at all, but that's solved by not giving everyone guns.
Bingo.
That's not solved by being like, once they snap, we'll know.
Right.
We won't... Well, it'll be too late at that point, because they've snapped.
Done.
You
it's
only
over.
Snap once you're shooting up the naval, you know, reserves.
Like,
you're not... You haven't snapped prior to snapping.
No.
You can only know someone snapped once they've snapped.
That's it.
In any case,
yeah.
Another frustrating shooting for America.
That's right.
But...
Ugh. God,
well, Tennessee
terrible.
Just wanted to get in on the action, you know? South Carolina's been getting a lot of discussion.
Too much press down there for South
Carolina. Too much press for South Carolina. Tennessee was like, hey, we're here too.
Come on.
Look at us.
Look at us. Yeah.
In any case, moving on to presidential politics.
Yes.
Which is where we wanted to be to begin with.
That's right. And there was some good stuff this week.
Hilarious
stuff. Real good stuff. Good and hilarious. That's right. Starting with Donald Trump.
Because
he is just the gift that keeps on giving. I hope that he hasn't gone too far this week, because it seems like maybe this was the week that everyone will realize that he jumped the shark. Because he got himself into a lot of trouble with basically all thinking
every
people
person
this week. Every person. He was in Iowa at the family faith something or other. We're going to talk about
that
in a
little bit.
Yeah, we're
going
to talk
a little bit
about it.
That's
where
he was. Second. Yeah.
He
said something about John McCain.
Took it to John McCain. Yeah.
He said he's a war hero because he was captured. I like people that weren't captured.
I like people that weren't captured. So good. So, John McCain is not a war hero. I think we can all agree that John McCain was a war hero, whether you like his politics
or
not.
We don't have to agree that he's a good person.
No.
Or even a smart person. But we can agree he's a war hero,
correct.
I think.
So, he just pissed off veterans, which is not who you want to piss off.
And then
he's already pissed off Hispanics.
Right.
I mean, he's really just
he's getting
he's
into
going
all
for
of
it.
The all the groups they're hoping to attract to win the presidency.
Yeah, exactly.
And then McCain also responded by saying that Trump was firing up the crazies. So then Trump decided to demand an apology from him for calling his fans crazy.
Right, because everybody obviously asked Trump if he wanted to take it back or apologize or anything like that.
And right, he was
like
no,
I want an apology.
Why did he call my supporters crazies?
Well, I mean, John McCain.
It's not hard to know.
Isn't as dumb as maybe we
thought. No, I know. But so in any case, he's pissed off almost everybody.
But every single candidate, you know.
Yeah, everyone basically denounced
this. Some of the candidates were a little slow to denounce his sort of, you know, Mexican raper comment. And even sort
of a few
of them.
That was a tough one for them because a lot of them agree.
Right. And so they were trying to walk a fine line there with not pissing off, you know, the base of their party, who was also racist against Mexicans and everyone else, really, for that matter. So, but this one was a no-brainer. And, like, by the end of the day, they had
already... They knee-jerk support veterans in fake ways.
Exactly.
They don't support veterans through money. But they do support veterans by saying that they support veterans. And this is he took away the one way in which they support veterans, which is through words.
Right, exactly, because
they certainly don't fund the VA.
No,
they certainly don't get us into wars. But they 100% like to say that they support veterans.
Right.
And this is the one thing that they can do to show veterans that they care,
yeah,
is say that they care about veterans.
That's right.
Then, as if it wasn't exciting enough to be in a war of words with John McCain, Donald Trump also ended up in a war of words with El Chapo, the Mexican drug lord who just escaped from prison.
That's right.
A Twitter war, nonetheless.
Yes.
El Chapo, whose Twitter handle is El Chapo Guzman.
Right. And this Twitter handle was supposedly unverified.
Right.
But now, I also read recently, and I don't even think we have it on here, but I just saw a headline this evening that he now has a bounty out for Donald Trump, supposedly.
If it's unverified, it's genius anyway, because the whole thing, because Donald Trump retaliated.
He retaliated, and he, like, reported it to the FBI.
And he reported it to the FBI.
Yeah. But he totally went...
El Chapo tweets, keep... fucking around.
Listen,
and
we can say that on
the
podcast.
We can say it. It's our podcast. Like, we had the news had written expletive.
Expletive.
We don't know which expletive, but we know which expletive.
Yeah, we know.
Keep fucking around, and I'm going to make you swallow your fucking words.
That's right.
And then, so Donald Trump warns the FBI, and then... Right.
But he's not afraid of a Twitter fight.
No!
If anyone is
so
afraid of
a
Twitter fight,
he tweets back,
Donald
can
Trump.
You envision Jeb Bush or Hillary Clinton negotiating with El Chapo, the Mexican drug lord who escaped from prison? Trump, however, would kick his ass. 2 exclamation points.
Oh my god. This is a man running for president.
It's a man who's running for president. I love, by the way, that he's even pissed off the one person who does fit his description of Mexicans.
I know.
Like,
totally.
El Chapo can't be like, no, I'm not a Mexican who's a drug runner. I'm your drug lord. Because he absolutely is, and is like the most powerful man in Mexico.
Right.
By the way, his prison escape, genius story.
So good.
So entertaining.
Right? I know.
Like, better than that New York State prison escape.
Way better.
Also, we're pretty sure that his prison escape was fake. And that they just let him out of prison and then needed to cover themselves. Because that is, like, a thing that they would do in Mexico for this guy. Because he's, like, the most powerful guy in Mexico.
Yeah.
But, like, it involves, like, a bird and a tunnel that was dug for a mile. And it was lit. And there was a rail in the tunnel. So he could basically, ride a train out of prison. I mean, that's exciting prison escape stuff, my friends.
It is.
That's elaborate. And I like an elaborate prison escape. If you're going to escape from prison, I want it to be elaborate.
It's got
to
be like that,
I'm not
right?
trying to have you just walk out of prison because you found
no,
a door.
That's
like,
not
that's
it.
That's the worst.
Yeah.
But so in any case, that is its own kind of exciting.
Yeah. Nothing to do with presidential politics, but while we're on
while we're on the El Chapo train.
El Chapo train, yeah, exactly. Steve King also said something very random, and he hasn't clarified it. Like, all
it's
the
so weird.
The press has, like, tried to get in touch with his office, but, like, he hasn't. Anyway, so
we all know Julian Castro.
Right, Julian Castro is the what is
Secretary
it? The housing and
housing
urban
and development.
Development, right?
Yeah.
And anyway, Steve King sent out a tweet with an infographic of Julian Castro, and the graphic said the GOP can kiss the Latino vote goodbye.
A thing that I'm sure he said many times, because they have made that a possibility
right,
many
exactly.
times.
Exactly. And so Steve King, the tweet accompanying that infographic, said, "What does Julian Castro know? Does he know that I'm as Hispanic and Latino as he?"
Like, what the hell does that mean?
What could that possibly mean?
They haven't clarified it, so we'll never know.
We'll never know.
But it leads us to believe that Steve King believes himself to be Latino.
Wow.
Or as Latino, or he believes that Julian Castro is not.
Yeah.
Neither of which are true statements.
I wonder if he going to start living as a Latino?
Is he going to Rachel Dolezal his way?
Right, exactly.
His way to being a Latino?
I would love that.
Well, it'd be more exciting than being Steve King. Certainly it'd be more exciting than being from Western Iowa or wherever he's from.
Bingo. Yeah. But back to Donald Trump really quickly. The Huffington Post, in a sort of like crazy declaration, like it was their lead story on either Thursday or Friday with like a huge headline or whatever.
Hilarious.
They are moving all of their Donald Trump campaign coverage to the entertainment section. And it was a very short story. It was literally just one paragraph. We'll read it to you.
Yeah.
Said, "After watching and listening to Donald Trump since he announced his candidacy for president, we have decided we won't report on Trump's campaign as part of the Huffington Post's political coverage. Instead, we will cover his campaign as part of our entertainment section. Our reason is simple. Trump's campaign is a sideshow. We won't take the bait. If you are interested in what the Donald has to say, you'll find it next to our stories on the Kardashians and the Bachelorettes." Which is genius.
Well, and it's fitting because a lot of the other campaigns are basically trying to not be seen with him anymore.
Well, right. I mean, this
they don't
is
want
like
him
we
in those
said.
Debates.
This is the jump the shark. There was buzz. There's supposedly buzz, and they were talking about this again on Meet the Press and ABC this morning or whatever the hell it is. Basically, like, there is buzz within these campaigns that there is going to be pressure for the debate organizers to not include him in the debates because of the fact that everyone basically like thinks that he's a sideshow.
But they have a problem because he's polling really high.
Right, exactly. He's ahead. He's ahead in a recent poll in North Carolina. He's ahead nationally in a lot of these.
The candidate that's winning.
No, you can't. And you also
so blame their own voters.
Right.
For
well,
that.
And I would say, and actually, and Rick Perry of all people, who was I heard a quote from, was like, "Let's have him on stage with
us."
Like, I mean, I understand, like, the reasoning, and I think we talked about this last week, like, is this, was, you know, was his statement about, you know, Hispanics, was that going to be a detriment to the whole party because he's, like, taking so much, you know, airtime with all of these, you know, crazy things that he's saying? But I would say, like, you would want to be on a stage with that to sort of like
to be like, you know what? I don't think all Mexican people
here's the crazy
drug smugglers. Yeah.
He's right there.
Right.
And here
I'm
am
a person
acting like a reasonable person who could actually be president.
Yeah.
Like, you want that dichotomy as a candidate. Like,
yeah,
right?
And I think especially from the guy who's has the votes to give up. I mean, like, that's 15% of the electorate in their primary right now is up for grabs because Donald Trump.
And that's
Trump,
a lot when there's 74 people running.
Exactly. That's the whole, that is enough to be in the lead as it currently is.
Right.
But so in any case, that whole Trump McCain thing, as we said, it happened at the Family Leadership Summit in Iowa. 10 candidates were there. They were Rick Perry, Lindsey Graham, Ben Carson, Rick Santorum, Scott Walker, Bobby Jindal, Mike Huckabee, Ted Cruz, and Donald Trump.
The ones you
so
would
an
think
exciting,
would be there,
an exciting
basically.
Spread.
Yeah.
And there were more shenanigans than just that one. That one got the most press.
Right. That one got the most. It didn't get the most press
inside
the room,
their own.
Though, actually,
yeah.
Because we'll get to that in a second. Actually, but
let's begin with the fact that they were taking questions from a moderator while a Bible sat on the table between them.
Right. Exactly. There were two chairs and then a table between. It was some Fox News goon, and there was a Bible. And Marco Rubio took the Bible bait immediately. He was the first one out.
He was ready with a quote.
Oh, yeah. He was going to... He picked it up and read from it. There's a picture of him. He's like sitting there reading the Bible. Yeah. And it was... I kind of get why he read this one, but also it just didn't... It doesn't seem like the one that you would pick, like,
well,
from the
whole... Well, he had to pick on the fly.
Bible.
He was sitting with a...
I'm sure they knew that Bible was there, and I'm sure he knew exactly which one
which
he was
going to
read
go for.
Days
well,
before
if you
he
had
got
to
there.
Just find a random quote in the Bible,
anyway,
that'd be tough.
But it was Luke 12, verse 48, and it was, "From everyone who has been given much, much will be demanded. And from the one who has been entrusted with much, much more will be asked." So I kind of
they never
get that,
stop
like,
taking.
Right, exactly.
They never stop taking from you.
Exactly.
That's what it was. But so... Trump got into other trouble.
Yes.
As well at this event. He didn't just get into trouble for insulting John McCain's war heroism. Right. He also got in trouble because he was asked if Trump was asked if he ever has asked God for forgiveness.
Yes.
And he didn't know the right answer.
He did not know the right answer.
I know. If I were on the stage at this event, right. I would have said yes.
Right. I think that Donald Trump does often know the right answer and says actively the wrong answer because that is
the most bombastic answer.
That's the most bombastic answer.
Right, because he said, I'm not sure I have. I just go in and try to do a better job from there. I don't think so. I think if I do something wrong, I think I'll just try and make it right. I don't bring God into that picture. I don't.
And he said that right after talking about how it surprises a lot of people that he's so Christian.
It surprises everyone. Right.
And then he also told an insane story about like taking communion. Okay. Too, by the way. Yeah.
I'm surprised that he's so Christian because it's false.
Well, exactly.
What surprises me about him saying that, is that it's an untruth that he made up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Scott Walker, as we mentioned, was there, obviously. And his one of the main themes of the day was religious freedom, of course, in the wake of the Supreme Court, you know, gay marriage decision. They're all mad that Christians are being persecuted now, of course.
Because it can get tough out there
So Scott Walker, had a real strong call for religious freedom. He said, that's something that was part of the founding of this country. That's something that we should never lose sight of, protecting religious liberties.
I agree, Scott Walker.
That's right.
I think that you don't agree. But
I think that you don't agree.
You're the one in the conversation that doesn't agree.
And you don't understand.
Right.
Right.
Another person who doesn't
understand. Bobby Jindal really doesn't understand. If Scott Walker sort of doesn't understand, then Bobby Jindal doesn't have a goddamn clue.
No. That's so true.
Because he said, the government should not be able to fire me, take away my tax status, or discriminate against me for being a Christian.
It is tough out there for Christians.
Yes, being fired for being Christian.
Fired for being Christian problem. I wish, by the way, that we were having more of that problem. We're not having enough of it, far as I'm concerned.
We've literally never
had that problem.
As a people, had that problem.
No, we've had the opposite problem, where people were getting hired for being Christian.
Since the beginning of time.
Right. No one has ever... We've never had a scourge in which Christians were being fired.
No, not once, actually.
And
I would probably
one state where
so
I know they're not having
say.
That problem is Louisiana, a state that probably should aim to have that problem.
They should be having
if you were, if they were having more of that problem in Louisiana, they might be having
Much
fewer other
place.
Problems.
Correct.
So, something to think about, Bobby Jindal.
Totally. Yes. And Rick Santorum is really concerned about families.
Yes.
He's always concerned about families. He's concerned about it in a sort of questionable way. He's concerned enough that he thinks schools should be talking about marriage and fatherhood.
Bizarre.
But then he went on to say something even wackier, where he said, we have to stop the federal government from breaking up families, whether it's welfare laws or our tax code. And that will be a high priority for me as a president.
What the hell does that mean?
The welfare and the
all
tax
the
code is
welfare
like ripping
laws are
families
ripping
apart?
Families apart?
That's not
by giving
right.
them access to food and shelter
they
at times that they're in need.
They're all confused about what these laws do and do not do.
I know.
Like all
none
of these
people are qualified to be president.
All of those statements that we just read from you are literally disqualifying statements because
so
it proves that they don't have a they literally don't know what's going on.
No. They don't know the most basic things about what it is to be part
and
of the American project.
And not only do they not
project.
Know them, but they know them wrong.
They know the opposite of them.
What is true.
To be they believe the opposite of what's true to be correct.
Yeah, that's right. Lindsey Graham, also, I can't believe this isn't getting more press.
Well, here's why. Because no one remembers he's running. As we proved last week, or the week before, when we tried to name all the candidates and forgot him every time.
Remember. Yeah. But he declared openly that we're in a religious war right now.
I don't know with who.
Well, I mean, with Islam, obviously. Are
we in a religious war with Islam? Well, from him, it's Islam. I believe we're in a religious war with gays for some of them. Some of them are
That's true.
Religious war with women. Some of them are in a religious war with people that aren't as Christian as them, but are still Christians. there's a lot of ways, the wrong kind of Christian.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like, this is not clear to me.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Anyway, speaking of... This doesn't directly have anything to do with presidential politics, but it sort of does because of Scott Walker.
It's a Scott Walker
exactly.
situation.
And he had...
Say goodbye to the weekend, guys.
Right, exactly. Because Wisconsin passed their state budget this week, and they removed the weekend from it.
Yeah.
And if you think they didn't.
And by the way, Wisconsin is like one of the birthplaces of like real union activism.
Yeah.
Like that's why when he repealed all those labor laws to protect unions, there was so much backlash. Because this is really a place where unions consider themselves an important part of the sort of like...
Yeah.
Union, they consider the Wisconsin labor movement an important part of the national labor movement, and also unions consider themselves an important part of the economy there.
Right.
So, in any case, Unions are the people that brought us weekends, as they don't tire of reminding us.
That's right.
Without unions, you don't have the right to take time off after a certain number of consecutive days of work.
That's right.
So there was a law in Wisconsin that if you worked 7 consecutive days, you had to get a day off.
Right. You were required a 24-hour break every 7 days.
And now...
Not anymore.
Yeah, you can just work any day you want all the time.
They are, of course, trying to spin this as pro-worker because there are people who want to work more hours. But obviously, there are people who will be forced to work more
hours. Here's the thing. You have always had the right to get another job and work 7 days a week if you want. Like, that, no one can take away your right to have too many
jobs.
So if you want to work 7 days a week, you have that right.
Yeah.
You don't... Your employer doesn't have the right to require it of you, which is an important protection because... In an employee-employer relationship, you are not the one with the agency. They are.
Right.
So as an employee, you don't often get to determine what your hours are. They get to determine what your hours are. And their recourse, when you don't want to do that, is to fire you. And your recourse is to do nothing.
Right.
So it's to fire yourself, basically.
And they can fire you now.
They can fire you now.
If you're an hourly employee and you don't want to work the eighth day, then
they can fire you. Yeah.
Find somebody who will.
Exactly. So this is not... good for workers.
No, it's not good for families
or
either.
The economy.
Or the economy, but like that's what I don't understand is that I
This is blatantly
it's so anti-family, and they are all obsessed with talking about what they want to do for as Rick Santorum said, he doesn't want to break up families with welfare. I would say this is much more
destructive to families
than welfare is.
Also, this is the same way though that they don't that they support veterans. They support families the way they support veterans, which
Correct.
Is through words,
right?
Not through actions.
No.
They actively destroy families through actions a lot of the time, but they do like to say that they support families, just as they like to say they support veterans, and that's really more important to them anyway.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we have a 17th in the GOP primary.
We have another, and this actually happened a couple weeks ago, but it just was brought to my attention recently by someone, and I don't even...
It was the most non-announcement
totally.
Out there.
But another person that we can forget on our list of trying to remember all of the GOP
candidates. We're never going to remember this guy, by the way.
Jim Gilmore?
Nope.
Who is he anyway?
He's like a former Virginia governor.
He was the governor of Virginia.
He and George Pataki lost to Mark Warner.
Yes, that's right.
He's the guy who screwed everything up for everybody.
That's right.
And he was in a campaign, like one of his, that campaign, I think the one against Mark Warner, was described as the bland leading the bland.
That's right. Yes. That's so good.
Yeah. So that's pretty exciting.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
So we have another George Pataki in our midst.
That's right.
Another person to miss out on the debates.
Yep.
To poll it 1-0%.
Yeah.
Meanwhile,
Jeb Bush is turning people to Hillary Clinton supporters
left, right, and center
because
driving people to the polls who are definitely not going to vote for him.
Yeah. So, the GOP is really trying to court Silicon Valley right now because they feel like that they can make inroads there, and I sort of get it because they want to, they want to loosen tax laws and do things like that, and that sort of is appealing to that crowd.
To moneyed tech people.
But, right, exactly. But so Bush was in San Francisco this last week, and he was using the ride-sharing app. And they are
Uber,
yes.
Not
the ride-sharing app. That's not
you know
there are There are a couple. I just didn't tell you which one it was.
Right.
Uber. And because they've really latched themselves onto Uber here. Because there's a big, if you don't live
there's
in one
movement.
Of these big cities, but there's a movement, we've even had it in Los Angeles, where the taxis, which are, the city
more highly
companies,
regulated.
Basically, and they're more highly regulated, are having trouble, keeping up with Uber. And
right,
so,
and it's because they can't be as cheap because they have to pay certain labor costs that Uber doesn't.
Correct.
Uber doesn't provide benefits for anyone. They don't provide any of these additional things that being employed by a taxi company
offers. So the Republicans have really come to the aid of Uber because they, of course, hate regulations.
Right.
And so it's the Democrats who have really
they
been sort of like leading the charge against
Uber. And they hate regulations. And so this is the perfect battle for them.
So anyway, but his Uber driver didn't recognize him.
No.
Unfortunately. Didn't know who he was. Did not know who Jeb Bush was.
Well, he doesn't have those telltale Bush eyes.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't. He looks...
He has the telltale Bush stupidity.
He looks too sane, which is,
He's not. He's been fooling people for a while because I think he does look saner than George.
Right, he's not.
As we've learned, he's stupider than George. He's actually stupider than George Bush,
right.
A man who didn't often speak in actual English words.
That's right.
But in any case, the Uber driver did not know who he was. But then also said he'll probably vote for Hillary Clinton.
Right.
So
he said that he hasn't voted before. He's not really interested in politics. But all of the press attention about this ride that he gave Jeb has sort of like made him pay
more
attention.
Maybe he should
go
vote this time.
Vote for Hillary.
For Hillary.
So, oops.
Well, that's exactly what meeting Jeb Bush would do for you.
That's right.
Convince you that Hillary Clinton is a great choice for president.
That's right. So Ben Carson is running for president, and we have often questioned why Ben Carson is running for president, and we figured it out this week.
Yes.
And it's to just party around the country.
Yeah.
Because that's what he's doing with all his
campaign. That's why I would run for president.
Right?
I mean, and if you're Ben Carson, a person who has no political experience and is an absolute nobody when you really get down to it, other than having a very inspiring life story that was portrayed by Cuba Gooding Jr. in a TV movie.
If you are the type of person who can get Joe Blow to give you $10 million to your campaign,
then,
and can then use it on private jets and giant music performances,
then
that's what you do.
That's the dream, guys.
God bless him.
Right?
Because
he's doing it.
That's exactly what he's doing. Because they had to do all their, you know, finance reporting, basically.
His last quarter, he brought in $8.5 million.
Right.
Spent $5.4 million without spending any money on TV advertising or any of the expensive...
Right, which is the most expensive... Right, exactly.
...ad blocks. I mean, he dropped, like, huge sums of money on... completely insane things.
Right. Well, he spent $25,000 just to rent the Detroit Music Hall, which is where he gave his announcement.
Oh, his announcement was a real spectacle.
Right.
There's
remember?
Because there's not only did
didn't
he spend
his wife
that,
like play the violin or something?
Oh,
he didn't have to pay her, obviously. But I mean, like, there were a lot
also,
of things going on.
He paid $15,000 to the Selected of God Choir, which is the one who performed the choir that performed at his announcement, and then also $10,000 to this contemporary vocal group Veritas, which also performed songs at his kickoff.
Yep.
And then $18,000 to the producer Kevin Cates, who I think helped produce the event.
Right, and he also gave $20,000 to this person who was the producer of the song that plays in the background of his like official launch campaign video, and that has 30,000 views on Facebook or on YouTube.
That's only 10,000 more views than dollars spent on the song.
Yeah, exactly. So, but that's not all.
No, because he's also been really luxurying it up a storm as he travels around the country.
Uh-huh.
And usually campaigns try to kind of prove that they're really frugal.
Right. Even Hillary Clinton, which has like, you know, tens of millions of dollars, is like riding the Amtrak around places.
No, not even. They're taking the bus.
Oh, they're taking the bus.
They're not even riding Amtrak. Amtrak is the luxury that her campaign staffers can't afford because they're busy probably riding megabus back and forth from the city to New York.
Not Ben Carson.
Or to D.C.
Private jets.
Private jets
private
all the way.
Private plane rentals all the way. That's right. And also, they're not staying in cheap hotels.
No.
Like, even remotely.
They stayed at the Algonquin. Which is a front to the Algonquin, as far as I can tell.
Right, and $800 a night.
And the Lux Sunset Hotel in Bel Air.
$800 a night.
Yeah. Rosewood Crescent in Dallas,
$700.
The Umstead Hotel? It's a spa in North Carolina.
Right, North Carolina. $400, which I assume is expensive for there, probably.
For North Carolina, probably. Yeah. So, he's not sorry.
Not sorry at all.
Then, we also had the first big Democratic cattle call.
Yes.
Finally.
I know.
Jesus Christ. We've had like 1,000 of these Republican ones.
I know. There's been so many. And finally, the Democrats got into the game
together.
Here. They had this Iowa Hall of Fame dinner thing where they had like
Cedar
13,
Rapids.
They had 1,300, you know, party people, obviously. Party people.
Yeah. Party people. They were not fun people.
I watched this.
You did?
On C-SPAN.
Okay, right.
On Friday night.
That's
so
what you were doing while people were having fun out there.
Crushed it on Friday night, if you're wondering.
He won Friday night by doing
watching C-SPAN. It was sad
a real
commentary on my life.
Killer Friday night activity.
Yeah, totally. So, there were some interesting things happened at this. I would say the two least interesting things were Lincoln Chafee and Jim Webb's presence at them.
Surprise, surprise.
Surprise, they were there.
No one cares about
Jim
Webb.
Jim Webb denounced the Iran deal in his speech.
Classic Jim Webb.
By the way.
A Republican
Lincoln
who's
Chafee
running
was
for the
just
Democratic.
Like the world's most boring person.
He is the world's
and
most boring person.
He went first, too.
He's
really got the crowd riled up. They went in alphabetical order, by the way.
Yeah. So Webb went last, but Chafee really got in there early. But in any case, Hillary Clinton had, I think, some interesting sort of response to a lot of the critiques that she's been hearing about.
Right, she's adding some new things to her stump speech recently, and it's all, you know, people are sort of trying to paint her as the candidate of the past. She's the oldest, well, Sanders is a little older, but she's sort of, you know, she's one of the older candidates. She's older than most of the Republicans. You know, her husband was the president in the 90s, obviously, as
she
we know.
She literally is a candidate of the past.
Right, exactly. She is, yes. So she's adding some things to sort of, like, try and, you know,
distance herself from that.
And so she said, trickle-down economics has to be one of the worst ideas in the 1980s. It's right up there with new Coke, shoulder pads, and big hair. I'm never going to let the Republicans rip away the progress we've made. They may have some fresh faces, but they are the party of the past. So she's trying to paint the Republicans as the party of the past, sort of referenced...
The party of shoulder pads
and
new Coke.
That's right. Referenced the fresh faces, which was she directed directly at the Republicans, but people... sort of also took that as a little bit of a, you know, veiled insult in the Martin O'Malley direction mm-hmm. as well.
Which she needs to be doing because he killed it at this,
that
right?
was, I mean, as I said, I watched this. That was my key takeaway. He crushed that. And in a way that was so crazy. Surprising, I was not expecting it at all. No one in the room was expecting it. And they were, he had them standing more than anybody else. And they were mostly partisan because they were either Hillary or Bernie people. Because right. as we could tell from both of their speeches, who basically had sort of like
half
their
the
halves of the room. And he just had people like in rapturous applause for the whole thing.
Crazy.
And he was like really, go. I mean, he's been trying to run to her left, but he like really went all in on the left. I mean, he was not just talking about like being anti-Wall Street. He was talking about jailing, like how it was infuriating to him that like Wall Street bankers like were not jailed after the, I mean, he like went for it and was like, I mean, it was a really rousing speech.
God.
It was a good
who knew?
15 minutes. No
Nobody.
One. Not a one.
Maybe he was counting this whole time on the surprise factor.
Maybe.
He was like, I'm going to wait until we finally have a big cattle call.
Yeah.
And then I will finally differentiate myself as an interesting human being for the first time in my life.
That's right. Yeah.
Because he's never succeeded at doing before.
Never. Like, they were, the room was chanting O'Malley at the end of his speech.
What?
Yes.
That's crazy.
No, it was crazy.
No room has ever chanted O'Malley at the end of any speech.
No. Never.
His or anyone else's.
No.
It's never happened.
Mm-mm.
No one's ever chanted for him.
No.
That's wild.
Yeah. It was impressive.
Yeah.
I would say. I mean, there's still hope for him, I think.
Well,
probably
he's,
too.
As we said, he's basically drafting Hillary.
Totally.
And that is not a bad place to be because,
nope.
you know, we're excited about Bernie Sanders for sure. There's a lot more excitement about him than anyone ever
would have thought.
So there's a sign that there's room for someone to her left.
Right.
But also, like, she is very likely to crash and burn because she's done it before. So
she's,
we know she's capable of it.
Seems to potentially be in the process of
right.
doing
it. Right. She might be doing it right now. So there's she's not a bad of all the people to draft in a presidential race.
That's right.
She's the one. And
right.
actually I think a lot of people if it does come to that will sort of be thrilled that he stepped into the race as quietly and randomly as he did because everyone has been very concerned about what happens when Hillary crashes and burns.
Yeah.
You know, we have our own hope that Bernie Sanders will step into the plate.
Right.
But I mean, I think there's a lot of people slightly to our right within the Democratic fold who wish that there was someone who well, not even won't support Bernie Sanders. I still think that he's very broadly would get broad support. But I think we'll just be happy to feel like there's someone behind her to step into that role.
Yes, I agree.
To that kind of moderate, boring role that they think always wins that never wins anything.
Yeah. Bernie's speech was great, but a lot of people are sort of pointing to his speech as proof that he sort of has a cap on his support,
sure.
basically. Because as we just said, you know, O'Malley had everybody standing and cheering and going crazy. Bernie sort of had his corner of the room cheering and going crazy, and no one else. Which was a little upsetting because I thought it was a great speech.
By that from within the Democratic
Party. I think it was probably the Hillary people were probably just more apt to stand for Martin O'Malley, who was currently a no one, than they were to show support for
real,
the person who might be her main challenger.
There's a real
right
race
now.
Going on between Hillary and Bernie Sanders. And I am not surprised by that because I also, he doesn't have this kind of relationship with the Democratic Party royalty or not,
no,
you know, or sort of tastemakers.
These
anyway,
these are people who are sympathetic to the Hillary Clinton.
Wait, these are people,
candidacy.
These are insiders in the Democratic Party.
Right.
These are not the people that I think he gets the votes from anyway. I've never
I
thought
agree.
That,
no.
you know, those people are always going to vote for Hillary.
Totally.
I think that that's really where his biggest challenge lies is that the party leadership is never going to support him.
Right.
Because that's why he's positioned to be who he is. The fact that he's getting even half the crowd to stand for him at a Democratic convention for a party that basically ran him out is pretty wild.
Yeah, I agree.
And a sign that he sort of has more crossover appeal than I think that they would like to admit. But I've never really thought that this kind of event was going to be how we got a Bernie Sanders candidate.
But he and his staff, I think, now know, then they may have known for a while, but that they have a real campaign on
right,
their hands.
They all got in thinking that they just had some random far-left nonsense campaign
right.
to do.
Because he very just recently has very much attempted to broaden his appeal, too. And these were actually some of his biggest applause lines, too, and not because they were necessarily so great, but I think his supporters in the room realized as soon as he said these things, that this was A, new, and B, like...
The ticket.
All right, he realizes that he is...
That he's playing the game
that
now.
That he's playing the game now. Yeah. And because he has just recently starting to weave in a lot of things about his civil rights background. Yeah. He talked about being arrested, doing, you know, protests in the 60s. He talked about marching on Washington with Martin Luther King Jr. He talked about the disproportionate incarceration of African Americans. He talked about needing a comprehensive immigration reform bill. He talked about the unemployment rate of young African Americans. I mean, he really sort of like went all in on the sort of racial civil rights issues of the time.
Well,
basically,
he's the only candidate in this race currently who can do that.
I know.
It was time for him to pull the trigger on that. I mean, it really, he's the, if we want to talk about a candidate that can sort of like carry on this legacy of having a more inclusive government that Obama has sort of just by his very presence created for us, like, yeah, we're going to end up with a white person as the president. I
right.
get that. That's that's not great, but sure. But I mean, he's the one who has the background to really pull, you know, to pull the inclusive thing into the next presidency. And Hillary doesn't really. I mean, she has sort of broader support in a lot of communities, and I think that's familiarity, really. But she hasn't really been doing anything for those communities the way that he can sort of say that he's tried to, at least.
Right.
And so I think that there's, like, these are the things that at this point, this is how you get people to show up to the polls who don't vote.
Right, exactly.
And so this is what you got to do.
But it was definitely exciting, though, because, I mean, had he not been gaining in the popularity that he has been, then he could have just carried on giving the same old stump speech.
Yeah.
So no, just the fact that this was in there was like,
shows that
he
realizes that he's in the game now.
Yeah, exactly.
This is crazy.
Totally.
I'm so excited, and I feel like I'm not as surprised. You know, we're not surprise, surprise, because we've said that there was a populist opening this whole time.
Yeah.
But I'm shocked by, like, last week, someone independently, who's not political, mentioned how excited they were about Bernie Sanders' campaign.
I know.
Now, we've known who Bernie Sanders is for a long time because we follow these things.
Yeah.
But random non-political Californians have not known who Bernie Sanders is.
No.
Because he's a socialist, and he's in Vermont, and that's, like, not even a thing you would think about.
Yeah.
I'm like, it blows my mind, like, some of the random people that are starting to be aware of him and excited about him.
I'm starting to see it on Facebook, too.
Yeah. From people that I'm like, really? You
that's,
vote?
I know. You and I talked about that recently.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And what is just as crazy is that while he was in Arizona, he was in Arizona at Netroots Nation, by the way.
That was a situation.
And that I was watching live, too, yesterday morning on a live stream on my computer. I've been doing this
it's
weekend?
It's like what I do with protests.
It was raining yesterday.
It was raining in L.A. There's nothing to do in L.A. when it rains.
Can't leave the house.
Brent also likes to watch these kinds of events the way I like to live stream protests.
Yeah.
Like, when they have, like, big Occupy protests or when they had those big Eric Garner protests in New York, I would spend hours in my house just, like, live streaming them on my iPad. I love doing that. I'll sit and watch a protest, which is literally nothing going on. Like, you can't see anything on the thing. Anyway, I'll sit and watch that for hours. The way that Brent likes to sit and watch these weird speeches.
And this was insane, because at Netroots Nation, he and Martin O'Malley were the only ones that were there, and a lot of people were mad that Clinton didn't go to, but she was apparently, she was smart not to.
Yeah.
Because they were supposed to have this thing where, like, they would go out and then, like, give sort of, like, an opening speech for a couple minutes, and then, like, they had a moderator who was there to, like, ask them questions, and they were, like, reading, they were going to read questions from Twitter and stuff. The whole thing was just, they were just shouted down by the Black Lives Matter
the whole time.
Crew. Almost the whole time.
Yeah.
Martin O'Malley took one question, and it was through screams. They let them up on stage at one point, and they talked for almost a full 20 minutes. They chanted the names of, like, people who have died recently.
It was awkward because everyone...
It was super awkward because they couldn't remove them. Like, at a Republican event, they would have just been like, all right, we'll get the fuck out of here. But everybody was obviously sympathetic to them. But also, everyone was like, can you please shut up? And, like, even at one point they said when they got up on the stage, like, whoever was, like, leading that faction of them were like, you know, we want to hear concrete things that they're gonna, that these candidates are going to say. And then they just
didn't let anyone say anything.
And they, like, even Martin O'Malley at the end, when he was like, when the moderator was like, well, our time's up, and he was like, but we just got started.
Yeah.
And then as soon as Bernie Sanders came out next, as soon as he walked on the stage, they immediately started doing the same thing again.
Yeah.
He barely got to say anything at all either. So it was really, it was sort
this
of
a weird strategy.
Upsetting. It was a dumb strategy.
Yeah.
Because
it's not a good protest strategy.
It wasn't at all. And, like, I understand why they didn't remove them from the hall, because on some level you can't remove that group of people from the hall, and I get that, but like, also shut up, people.
Right.
Like, you had made your point like 5 minutes into the situation, and you could have asked the question, and the moderator could have posed the question to both of the candidates,
right,
and they could have answered, and then they could have carried on like going about their business.
The kind of thing I imagine is happening in Arizona. It's like weird, ill-conceived protest strategies.
It wasn't great.
Because that's not, when you're doing the shouting down thing, you have to like have a strategy that, like, first of all, you only do the shouting down thing if you legit don't want to let anyone talk on the stage at any point.
Right,
if
exactly, you're not, and that couldn't have been their plan.
If you're trying to tell them that you want to hear concrete things that they have to say, then you can't do the shouting down strategy. You go into the RNC, you do the shouting down strategy.
Exactly.
You don't give a shit about what they're saying. They're talking nonsense anyway. You don't do it at your own, like, at the Democratic Party Candidates Forum at a progressive event.
Event, right,
like,
exactly.
That's not what you do.
Martin O'Malley did get himself into a little bit of trouble.
Oh,
because he said Black Lives Matter, White Lives Matter, All Lives Matter, and he has since apologized for that, because that's not
what you say.
Anyway, but back to Bernie Sanders. The reason that
he was in Arizona
and he was at Netroots Nation, that's why. He had a rally that now has bested his Wisconsin rally at 10,000 people, with 11,347 people at the Phoenix Convention Center. That was the official number that the convention center gave,
this
not his campaign.
This is now the biggest rally that any candidate has held, because previously it was his Madison rally at 10,000 people. And he's heading to Texas, where they've had to change venues because they were supposed to be in like a town hall, and they basically had to rent stadiums for him now.
Right. Well, and this is another, add this to the list of another reason why it is good to have primaries.
Yeah.
Because he is going, and he has said that he is going to do this. He's like, I'm going to go into states where I feel like my message can resonate with people, even if they are red states. And obviously Arizona people wanted to hear that.
Yeah.
Texas people want to hear this.
They have the same problem in the primaries that we have in the general, where I get pissed during the general because candidates only come here to raise money, and they don't ever say anything about what they would do for California or what they would do for New York or what they would do for any of the states they know they're going to win.
Right.
They come here, they take our money, and then they take that money to another state.
Right.
This is sort of like what happens in the primaries in states that no one thinks are really in play in the primary season. It's like, the Democratic candidates don't go to Texas to campaign.
No.
It's a later primary. It doesn't mean anything because by then they've basically decided who's going to be the candidate anyway.
Yeah.
And so the established candidates don't bother with those states.
Yeah.
And so they don't really get a say in who the candidate becomes. And
that's right.
He's basically going in. It's like Howard Dean's 50-state strategy, which I always thought
was a great strategy.
They should have always been pursuing. They should always be running everyone in all. They should be running real campaigns in every state, even if they don't have a snowball's chance in hell, because that's how you build a progressive voting base to vote in the future.
And that's what he's doing.
And that's what
right
he's doing.
Yeah. So he's helping whether he gets the nomination or not.
He's winning things. He's winning even if he loses.
That's right.
That great.
Now, we sort of have talked about the potential, you know, in reference to if Hillary crashes and burns, if Bernie isn't the guy, you know,
someone's got to draft Hillary.
We just talked about whether it was O'Malley. Apparently, we are not. Joe Biden is still in the mix.
Here's what I think is going on. I think that Joe Biden was probably like, I don't know. Because there was so much excitement earlier about Hillary, and he was like, I'm not trying to get involved in all that.
Right.
Then he remembered, as everyone seems to be remembering, way later than it seems like they should be remembering.
Right.
We remembered years before this all started.
Right.
We remembered as it was happening the first time.
We never forgot.
We've always known this.
Yeah.
But I think he probably saw her start to flag a little, starts to see that, like, Bernie Sanders is mysteriously sneaking up on her.
What?
Like, who? And then was kind of like, okay, wait a minute.
I get it.
I guess there is a place for me in this race, because she might fall apart.
Well, and he still polls, like, in the double digits in all of these states, and he hasn't declared that he's running.
He's got a very charming smile.
He really does.
Very charming. He says delightfully inappropriate things all the time. And
touches people inappropriately sometimes. Gives people massages.
And then has the world's most charming movie star smile.
That's right.
I mean, that's...
He's got a great collection of Ray-Bans, too.
Great collection of Ray-Bans. He's cool looking. He always looks cool.
Yeah.
That's...
But insiders that know him are talking about the fact that he is definitely still considering it and is going to have a final decision by the end of the summer, targeted sometime in September.
I sometimes forget that you can still declare.
I know, right?
Like, it feels like the race is already happening. And, like, the primaries are tomorrow.
It's so early.
It's
like the Iowa caucuses are in February.
Yeah.
Like, you could announce in January if you were a big enough name and still probably, you know, pull
if
it
you
together.
Were, if you were Beyonce, you could announce in January and probably still win.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, last month, the Wall Street Journal had reported after Beau had died that it was Beau's basically last dying wish that his father run for president again. So there are people who think that he may do it, you know, for that reason. And then the other reason, like we just said, that there's, you know, a perceived Clinton vulnerability that he's got to be looking at right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I just think it's a little bit harder for me to see with him, because I think that Hillary's vulnerability is always going to be to her left. And like, I just don't think that he fits.
He's not there.
There. I think his best hope is to be the person, the most reasonable one left.
Right.
Standing when we've decided that
and
no one else is
in. And I think if Martin O'Malley is in this race and willing to run to her left the way that he's been doing, there's not really a place for a Joe Biden. Because and I think, but I also think that Democrats probably think there is. Democrats are notoriously bad at reading what are clear signals that America is sending them about where the voting, where the population is going in terms of voting.
Yeah.
We talk about this all the time. But so I think that probably from the sort of like inward focused Democrats, they probably, because they've been pursuing a losing strategy for years now, they probably think that there's plenty of room in the middle for someone. They probably are worried no one is far enough to the middle in this race, because how are we going to get swing voters?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like that's what their concern is. And as we know, swing voters don't come to the person in the middle. They come to nobody. The voters that the Democrats win with come from the left.
That's right.
Or they come from young people, or they come from whatever. They don't come from the middle. The middle hates us, so whatever.
No. We have a winning coalition that hardly includes anyone in the middle.
Exactly. We don't need the middle people. So that's what I think everyone else is responding to. But I think if you are within sort of like Democratic Party groupthink, you probably are like, we got to run the way Clinton ran.
Right.
Clinton, the original Clinton, the first Clinton, Bill Clinton, ran to get the swing voters.
Right.
That was we were always talking about swing voters in those years.
Right. But that was almost 30 years ago.
It was almost 30 years ago. We had different everything.
Right.
Then.
And he was running because his message to the middle resonated, because the party hadn't been in power in a long time, and it had gone pretty far to the left in its sort of, you know, outskirts of powerness.
Exactly.
So at that point, it made sense for him to do that, and it was a winning strategy. It's just not
any
longer.
It's not anymore. The party has gone so far to the right that its own base doesn't like it anymore. That's a different world than Clinton's world.
Correct.
Clinton was coming out of what is essentially Reagan world.
Yes.
You know? Nobody thinks the first Bush presidency was happening.
No.
And that was not a real thing.
No.
But, like, he was coming out of Reagan world. That's a whole different world to be in.
Totally.
So, in any case.
Yeah.
Anyway. In any case.
Yeah. He had to run as a new Democrat.
Yeah. Well, he didn't have to, but
he could.
Well,
no, but that was what was going to win.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Nobody has to run as a new Democrat.
Correct.
Also, you know who ran against him in the original primary? Jerry Brown.
I know.
You know who I wanted to have win?
Jerry Brown. I know.
And now I finally get to live in Jerry Brown's world.
And it's great.
It's great.
I know.
I was right all, even as a small child, we were right all along.
I still feel like I wish Jerry Brown would have ran, and I realize that he's old. I think what Jerry Brown should have done is said that he would run for one term.
Yes. Yes.
But
and just been like, yeah, I get it. I'm old, but I'm Jerry Brown.
Yeah.
I've fixed everything, everywhere. Everywhere I go to turns to gold.
That's right.
Like, I never really thought about this, but I did finally get to live in Jerry Brown's Republic.
Yeah. And it was spectacular.
It's as great as you would think it would be.
Yeah. That's right.
Oh, boy. Except the charter school thing. Long story. Not going into it. Moving on. Michael Grimm, disgraced Staten Island representative who ran even though he was under indictment.
Was elected, even though he was under indictment.
Don't want to insult you by
thinking that you wouldn't elect someone
who was under indictment. That's not you. That's not you. He was sentenced to 8 months in prison this week. He pleaded guilty last year to tax fraud. As you recall, or maybe you don't, but you should be reminded, he had a restaurant called Healthalicious. That he was hiding earnings from wages, and it was a restaurant in New York. So he got indicted about, I think, a few years ago.
Yeah,
and
I think so.
He, while under indictment, decided to just
still go for
run
it.
Run for office anyway. Yeah. And the people of Staten Island were like, "Yeah, that's fine.
Great,
we can live with that."
Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, he's handsome.
He's handsome, right? Then he left, and it triggered all sorts of chaos because who knows what happened? How do you decide who's going to follow up Michael Grimm?
No,
this is a group of people that knowingly elected a criminal.
That's right.
Like, what do you do then?
Elect anyone else?
Right, and any person in Staten Island is, I guess, fair game at this point.
But he had faced up to 3 years in prison. He ended up only getting 8 months, which seems like not much. But he was also really pushing
to
get no jail time. But the judge was hilariously not having it, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, she had a couple gems of quotes where she said, "Your moral compass, Mr. Grimm, needs some reorientation."
And then she also said she wasn't impressed by that she wasn't impressed because she was, quote, troubled by the tenor of the somewhat belated apology.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. So, anyway, Michael Graham, 8 months.
Going to prison.
That's right.
Him and Bob McDonald can hang together in the prison club.
Yeah, they totally can.
It'll be fun.
Mm, boy.
And in final news.
Right. We, have talked a lot about how you and I think that it's sort of obvious that the Confederate flag is just truly a racist symbol.
And it's not just you and I.
It's not just us. No.
It's a lot of people.
It's a lot of people. But
all the thinking people, really.
Exactly. But I think we finally have definitive proof that that is the case this week. And that definitive proof came to us from the state of Oklahoma, which was not
in the Confederacy. It wasn't even a state. It was Indian territory at the time of the Civil War.
Right.
There were battles, Civil War battles, fought in Oklahoma.
Yes.
The state soon to be named Oklahoma. But it was not a territory of any place because it didn't belong to anyone.
But they did show up to greet the black president with Confederate flags this week when he came to their state.
Yeah. Haven't heard a lot.
No.
It's hard when you're living that far out in nowhere. Mm-hmm. Hadn't heard about how they weren't in the Confederacy in the first place. So this flag that's such an important part of the heritage of the South was not a part of their heritage anyway.
No.
And second of all, that the fact that they actively were like, you know what a great event to go to with the Confederate flag is? It's when the president comes
to
town.
It's when the black president comes.
That's how you know, guys, that you're idiots.
So there it is. Proof that Oklahomans are both idiots and racists.
That's right.
And that the Confederate flag is a racist symbol. And not a symbol of Southern national pride.
But actually, in exciting news, Obama was the first president to visit a federal prison.
Yeah, that's what he was there for. He's been doing sort of a week-long push on prison or, reform.
Prison reform,
prison reform and justice reform or whatever you want to call it. Yeah.
And so that was an exciting thing that
that
happened.
Yeah.
There's not more to the story, but there it is.
He went to one.
He went to one, period. So now we know.
Yep.
Him and Johnny Cash, both people that have gone to visit federal prisons.
Prisons, that's right.
So in any case, that's the news this week.
That's right.
Next week, there will be more of it.
More campaign news.
More campaign news.
Obviously.
That's all that's left at this point. It's the middle of the summer. Real things aren't happening.
Nope.
But campaigns are brewing.
That's right.
And we'll be there to cover them.
Yes.
All right. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.